Hi, this is Pastor Mike from the Gospel Church. You're listening to our podcast. It's my hope that as you listen to it, that you'll fall deeply in love with Jesus and that you trust him with every part of your life. Thanks for listening.
Now, as we start looking at our text today, I believe that one of my favorite things about the scriptures is that it is a story that is contagious, that it changes our life because of our experience with a living God, not just the God that we heard about or that we studied or that we heard somebody else's story. Our experience as Christians drives us to be people who are compelled to tell because of the experience that we had. And I don't know about you, I find that over and over again, whenever I have a great experience, I love telling people about it. So for me, back when COVID wasn't a really big deal, my favorite thing to do was to go find a new coffee shop. I don't know if anybody likes coffee shops. I know there's like five people in the world that don't like coffee, but that's okay. We're just kind of like ignore that that's a reality for you. But for me, coffee has actually been a really interesting experience throughout my life because I grew up in the heartbeat of coffee in the world. I grew up in Colombia where they make Colombian coffee, and I never liked it growing up. For some reason, I just didn't like it. I had heard at one point that it stunted your growth, and so I was like, I want to be tall like my dad, so I'm not going to drink any coffee because I was terrified that it wouldn't grow, and so I didn't drink any. And then in college, I was introduced to coffee at a restaurant called Perkins Restaurant, which, by the way, has the worst coffee in the world. I have no idea why that was like the coffee that got me hooked. And yet that addiction started in college and it has continued to this day. And it's no longer addiction. It's a fascination, right? It's something I love to be a part of and something I imbibe in every day, coffee. And so when I find a great coffee shop, I like to tell other people about it. In fact, my favorite coffee shop in the city, just shout out to them, is the Frothy Monkey on 51st. I'm telling you, you just feel cooler walking into that place, right? It's got the exposed beams, it's got the cool lighting, it's in this old like warehouse kind of space, and man, you just feel like you're home when you get there. In fact, the only thing wrong with the place is the parking. Everything else is like incredible at the Frothy Monkey on 51st. And so when we had a gift given to our team, every single one of our team members got a gift for Pastor Appreciation Month. And guess what our church decided to give us? Because they know how much we love the Frothy Monkey, everybody got a gift card to the Frothy Monkey. Because this is just like our fascination, our desire to be there, and we enjoy it so much. And I tell you this story because not that I want you to go there today, although I'm sure some of you may check it out, because every time I talk about a restaurant, everybody goes there after church. But because I think it's important for us to talk about the phenomenon of experience and how a true experience changes our behavior. And if we have an experience that's compelling enough, we can't help but talk about it to other people. And today we're walking through this value that the gospel church has, which is to go. We've been walking through the series, the four rhythms of the gospel church, that we gather, we grow, we give, and we go. We gather together to worship Jesus. We grow deeper spiritually and deeper relationally. We give of ourselves, our time, talent, and treasure and life to the mission of God. And then last, today, what we're going to be talking about is we're talking about how to go and why that really matters. And the question I've been asking myself over and over again is, why is this one so hard for me? Why is it so hard for me to live a life that goes? And why is it so hard to talk about it sometimes? Because we intellectually know that we should go and tell how good God is and what he's done for our life. But so often, we become observers rather than participants in going, right? So the question is why? Why is it so hard? And my argument today is that this is primarily an experience issue. Because when we experience God, we go and tell others. So it's not an obedience issue as much as it is an experience issue. When we experience the fullness of who God is, and we experience his grace and his mercy, when that changes us fundamentally at our core, we naturally will go tell. This is the phenomenon that you see when you experience something that is shocking or amazing, right? Like I was watching football last weekend, and I didn't really watch a lot of football, which is kind of surprising for me in the afternoons. Usually I have it on at some point. But I decided just to flip it on, and I saw a quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals, a guy named Kyler Murray, bail out at the end of the game. The game seemed like it was over, and he runs about 40 yards being chased by 300-pound men. So Kyler Murray is this tiny guy. Like he's like 5'8", okay? He's running for his life, throws the football 60 yards down the field. Out of nowhere, this guy pops up, catches the ball between three people, and I just screamed. I was like, oh, my goodness. I thought it was over. What was the first thing I did? I texted my friends. I was like, did you see that? Because I was wondering if anybody else saw it. Why? Because I had an experience, and that experience propelled me to tell somebody or ask if anybody else had that same experience. And I believe if we're going to embrace this idea of being people who go, that we need to reclaim our experience with God. And so the value of go for us, let me just read it to you, is to go to our community, workplace, and the world by making disciples and planting churches. For us at the Gospel Church, this means having a missionary mentality, that we believe that we are sent, that God has called us to the place that we live for his glory and his renown, and God has sent us there. That's why we're not somewhere else in the world. That's why we're not in Cairo or in Paris or in Kathmandu, because God has sent us to Nashville, and he's not sent us here for our own joy and our own pleasure and the experience of living in a cool city, but rather he sent us here to be ambassadors of grace. So we're going to go look back in the Old Testament at a man who was sent. His name is Isaiah. Now let's read in Isaiah chapter 6, verse 1, this experience that Isaiah has. We're going to unpack what God taught Isaiah through this experience, and then we're going to apply it to our own life, and then we're going to talk about what that looks like for us as a community. So first of all, we read the text. It says this: in the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord seated on a high and lofty throne, and the hem of his robe filled the temple. Seraphim were standing above him. They each had six wings. With two they covered their faces. With two they covered their feet. And with two they flew. And one called to another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of armies. His glory fills the whole earth." The foundations of the doorways shook at the sound of their voices, and the temple was filled with smoke. Then I said, "Woe is me, for I am ruined, because I am a man of unclean lips and live among a people of unclean lips, and because my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of armies." Then one of the seraphim flew to me, and in his hand was a glowing coal that he had taken from the altar with tongs. He touched my mouth with it and said, "Now that this has touched your lips, your iniquity is removed and your sin is atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord asking, "Who should I send? Who will go for us?" I said, "Here I am. Send me." Today in our text, we find Isaiah, who is a prophet of God, experiencing a season of turmoil. And we know this because of what our text says about the moment that he's in. Verse 1, we see that King Uzziah dies. And that's very easy for us to gloss over and just go, we don't know who Uzziah is. We don't know why that's a big deal. Why would it even be in the text? But if you do your homework, you find that Uzziah was a king that was the most prosperous king that Israel had ever known, excepting only King Solomon. Under his leadership, the nation of Israel experienced unprecedented stability and prosperity. And Uzziah reigned for 52 years. 52 years. Can you imagine having a president rule a country for 52 years. We have no framework for the idea of someone ruling a nation for 52 years. That means that every single person that was almost every single person that lived in Israel at the time had never known a different king. And if we're going to extrapolate that to our own life, that'd be almost like having President Nixon still be president today, right? For many of us, like, that just seems like an ancient age, having Richard Nixon as president. But can you imagine us still having him as president today? That's insane, right? And here you find Uzziah dying, and the entire nation is uncertain as to what is going to happen next. They don't know who's going to be the next king. They're not sure what that's going to look like. They don't know if they're going to be invaded by their enemies. They don't know how life is going to turn out for them. And there's an obvious parallel, right, to how we feel today. There is uncertainty in our life. We've just come off a very tumultuous presidential election. We've gone through a coronavirus that's changed the way that we operate. I mean, whoever thought that we'd be wearing masks? And yet, in the middle of all this, we experience something different. During a time of incredible upheaval, there is an opportunity. There's an opportunity to move from our casual comfort and then step into an experience with God that will change us. And so we're going to see three things that Isaiah experiences, and they're true for us, is that when we experience God, we step into some things. And the first of them is this, is that when we experience God, we understand God's infinite value. And Isaiah sees a vision of God on his throne in this time of turmoil. And he sees God on a throne, and his robe fills the temple. And as he's watching God, he sees seraphim, which are angels. And these angels are specific angels that are dedicated to the worship of God. They're unique. They have six wings. With two, they cover their feet, signifying the holiness of God. With two, they cover their faces because they're sheltering themselves from the presence of God because God's glory is so overwhelming. And with two, they fly and they cry out to each other about the holiness of God and the insurmountable worth that he has. And Isaiah sees it and experiences God's majesty. And the first thing he does is he understands that God is holy and he is worthy of all affection, and God is different than Isaiah. He realizes that God is pure and that he is right and that he is true, and Isaiah is none of these things. And Isaiah, his first words that he says is he says, "Woe is me." If you look with me in verse 5. It says, "Woe is me, for I am ruined, because I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and because my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of armies." Isaiah realizes that he's a sinful man, that he's someone who sinned and is unworthy of a friendship with God, and he lives among a people that also is filled with sin. And he says, "I am undone, I'm ruined. I'm falling apart because I've seen God and I cannot stand in my own righteousness." And this is what we see in the scriptures, is that the Bible tells us that God is holy and good. And we have sinned against him. And because of our sin, we cannot be in his presence, because sin cannot enter into the presence of God. And Isaiah is feeling the weight of that. And he feels the pain of his sin. And he mourns it. And here I think is something that's important, is that when we enter into the presence of God, we should not enter into God's presence casually or a feeling of entitlement, like God exists to serve us and give us everything that we want. No, God is a king on a throne, and he is worth every part of our life. And we exist to serve him, not the other way around. And in the middle of this moment, Isaiah feels completely inadequate and broken, like his life is ending. And then he experiences what is perhaps the most incredible part of God's nature, is that God not only is a holy God, he is a merciful and gracious God. So God is both fully right and good, but he's also kind and gracious to those who do not measure up. And the second thing we experience when we encounter the living God is we receive his amazing grace. The reason to say amazing grace is because when you actually experience God's grace to you, it overwhelms you. It's something that is not merited. And here in Isaiah chapter 6, we find Isaiah experiencing that kind of grace. In verse 6, you see one of these seraphim flying to him, and he has a coal in his hand. And he places it on his mouth, which I cannot imagine what that would be like. In fact, when I was studying this, I was like, what's up with the coal? Like, he takes a burning coal and puts it on Isaiah's mouth. Ouch, right? And what is this coal? Is this magical? Is this something that will sear away his sin? What is this symbol of this coal? And the coal is not magical. It has no power, but it is a representation of God's gracious purification and forgiveness, that it burns away his sin. There's no more. God has provided atonement for Isaiah's sin, ultimately in Jesus. And God cleanses him from his unrighteousness, and God offers forgiveness and restoration. So when it comes to the experience that we have with God, the first step is seeing that God is worth our affection and our entire life, that he is of surpassing value. But the second step is realizing that God has forgiven us and has allowed us to come close to him, even though we didn't deserve it. So no longer is it simply an academic exercise that God is awesome and that we've broken our relationship with him and he's unattainable. But now God has said, I'm going to give you an opportunity to not just be my enemy, but to be my son or my daughter. And that is amazing. It's amazing. And I believe that, to my everlasting shame, is that I sometimes forget how amazing that really is. I forget how amazing it is that Jesus came and died for me, because it's become the new status quo, the new normal. But there must be a way to return back and remember the goodness and the sweetness of our salvation. Do you remember the day you gave your life to Jesus? Do you remember the time where you experienced grace that you didn't deserve, relationship that you didn't deserve, love that you didn't deserve? Do you remember that moment where God said, you're coming home with me? It's in those moments that the truth of the gospel becomes far more than just an intellectual exercise, becomes a part of our experience of God's love for us. Friends, I believe that the greatest problem is this disconnect, where we see our salvation, God's goodness and mercy to us, as only something that happened in the past, but not something that's continuing to be ongoing in our present reality. When we talk about the gospel at the Gospel Church, we want to make sure that we realize that our experience with Jesus is not just a moment where we gave our life to him and we believed the story of redemption, but rather it is something that we experience on a day-to-day basis, where we experience the fact that God has called us his child. So I want you to hear this today. If you've given your heart and your life to Jesus, you've moved into a different category. You're now a child of God. He has adopted you into his family. And you have the same promises and future that has been given to Jesus Christ. Is that insane? That's incredibly good news. And even though the world may start telling you, hey, you don't measure up and no one really will love you, if they knew what you did, then people would run from you. If they just saw your failures and your insecurities, if they saw how you really think about people, if they saw your past, no one would want to be close to you. But there's someone who knows every single thing you've ever done and loves you. He loves you fiercely, and he cares for you. See, here's the thing. It's like, I've thought about this. I've got three little girls, Abigail, Violet, and Georgia. They may be watching this at my house right now. And there's nothing that they could do to make me stop loving them. It's non-negotiable. I would do anything for them. Why? Because they're mine. And the same thing is true for you, is that God cares for you that way. He would move heaven and earth to bring you into his home. And when we understand that, then the easy step from there is to go tell, which is the third thing. So we respond to this by going and telling. So after Isaiah has had his sins removed, he hears now, finally, the voice of God. He hadn't heard God's voice to this moment, but in this moment, he hears the voice of the Lord asking, and the Lord asks a question. The question is this. God says, who should I send? Who will go for us? Isaiah hears God asking a rhetorical question because God already knows who he's calling. He's calling Isaiah. But he's also an invitation for Isaiah to respond. And Isaiah raises his hand and says, I'm right here, send me. And God sends him back to the people of Israel, the very same people that he's living among. He doesn't send him to Nineveh, a place of God's enemies. He does not send him to Babylon or Egypt. He does not send him to Greece. God sends him back to his own people to proclaim God's will for them, that they would repent and believe. Because Isaiah's mission field was his neighborhood. And I think that this is an important thing for us to realize, is that God calls us to be people who have that same mentality where we go back to our communities after we've experienced God and we tell people what we've experienced. See, here's the deal. Often we can think about our experience with God almost like a cul-de-sac. So if you think about a neighborhood, you know what a cul-de-sac is. Everybody knows what that is, right? It's a dead end where a bunch of houses are. Sometimes there's a basketball court in front of one of them because it's a place where you live. And often we can just experience the gospel like this. Like, we're like, cool, we're just going to take this with us. We're just going to, like, apply it to our life. And we're just going to go nowhere with it other than with us. It stops with us. But that's not the biblical model. The biblical model is not that of a cul-de-sac. It's that of a superhighway of grace where we receive it and then we pass it on to others. We receive something from God and we give it away. Because the gospel is too good to be kept to ourselves. And over again in the Bible, you see this idea of the gospel being good news. It's literally what it means. The word is euangelion in Greek. Good news. That it is good news that we cannot keep to ourselves. One of my favorite stories in the entire Old Testament is the story of some lepers that discovered that the enemy army that had been surrounding their city that was bringing famine and starvation to the entire city left in the middle of the night. And as they're creeping around through all their stuff, looking for food and eating all the stuff that was left behind and taking the gold that had been left behind by these soldiers as they left, they realize in the middle of all this, as they're making themselves satisfied with everything that God has provided for them, that they should not keep this to themselves. That they cannot be people who let the gospel end with themselves, but rather they must push it out. They must go tell because there are many around them who still have not experienced that grace. And that is why we believe that it's important for us to be people who go. Because there are people all around us who have not experienced Jesus Christ. And you may say this, you know, I hear this all the time. People go, hey, listen, Nashville's a place that's the buckle of the Bible Belt. Like, why would anybody need to go do that? I mean, there are churches on every corner, to which I say, not yet, but we're trying, okay? All right, we're not there yet, but we do want to see this mission of God to continue to reach and continue to expand in our city. We want to get there. But what I've seen is, as we've really launched this initiative this year, we threw this vision out there for you that we want you to love your neighbor and to choose someone to care for and love and develop a relationship with so that you can share Christ with them. What I've seen is that many of my neighbors don't know Jesus. As I've actually gotten to know them, I've realized many of them grew up in Christian homes and around Christians, but never had an experience with God that changed them. I'm sure you have people like that in your life too. It's not going to be hard for you to think about. People that you knew that went to church growing up, went to youth group with you, maybe it was your brother or sister, that they were around the people of God, but never really had a lasting experience with God. And the reality is that God loves them very much. He loves them so much that he sent his son Jesus. And he also loves them so much that he sent his adopted son or daughter, which is you, to be in their life so they can experience how good Jesus is. So how do you do that? How do you do it? I don't think there's any other way than just getting messy with people, getting into their life, becoming known and knowing them. And one of the things that I thought was the most encouraging for me this year was as we started getting to know our neighbors and realized a lot of them are like not really going to church anywhere, we decided that we wanted to be people who made gates in our life where people could cross over into our community, into our life. And so I actually literally put a gate in my fence between me and my neighbor. And I never built a gate before. So I went to Home Depot and I like looked at the schematics, and then I went and bought all this stuff, and I dug a hole, I put quickcrete in the ground, stuck a pole in, and built a gate. It was like the most manly thing I've done this year. I was like, wow, I built a gate, like in my fence. It was awesome. But the thing that's so interesting to me is this: because we built the gate, we've actually become friends and neighbors, like true neighbors with the people that live around us. And we want more than the fact that we can just like, at that point, you know, watch over each other's kids and have friends in our community. But what we really want is we want all of them to come and know Jesus Christ. So we won't just be neighbors for a couple years in the same subdivision, but rather we would be neighbors for eternity in heaven. Why? Because Jesus loves them. And as we've built gates and relationships with them, we've realized we really love them too. We care about the people that we live among. And so as a culture of a church that we say, man, we're missionaries. We're called to be people who love our city and our neighbors and our friends well. We realize that this is something that constantly we're going to have pushback. And the reason we don't live in this is most, and I'm just going to probably just put myself out there and just kind of just like show my own issues in front of you. The reason I don't do this is because I'm still scared about what people think about me. I don't know if you feel the same way. It's like, man, what if they won't like me if I tell them about Jesus? What if they think I'm weird because I'm talking to them about Jesus? What if this relationship's going to be over once I tell them that I care about them? Have you ever felt that way? It's like, man, it's kind of cool not having anybody know. Which, by the way, is like a real thing for me because like once people know I'm a pastor, man, the conversation changes. But when I show up and people don't know, I was getting my hair cut the other day, And the lady didn't know I was a pastor. Man, she told me some crazy things. But the minute she found out I was a pastor, she cleaned up the language real quick, okay? She was like, whoa, okay. Same thing with my neighbors. Like, there's some of my neighbors didn't know that I was a pastor, and they were like literally telling me some of the craziest stories. And then they found out I was a pastor. And I was like, oh, we're sorry for what we just told you. Like, it was like one of those moments. And this is one of the things I thought was so incredible about that conversation, was that it was an opportunity for me to say, you know what? I'm not scared of who you really are. In fact, I really like you. And I'm so glad we're friends. And you were such good friends with me, you could tell me what was really going on in your heart. But let me just tell you, if you ever want to talk about anything, I'm here. And it's interesting to see what kind of relationships we can have when we're just authentic in who we really are and then really care about people. And so that's my invitation to you as we close. I'm going to invite our band to come up. And I want to bring us back to this concept of experience. Again, when I started out the sermon by saying our biggest issue is not facts, not information, it's experience. The reason why our faith sometimes just ends with us and isn't propelled out from our life, the reason we don't just live with a missional mentality is not because we don't have enough information. It's because our hearts aren't hot for Jesus. They're not on fire for the Lord. And so I want you to just take some time as we close out the service to just get really, really focused on God. To shut out the whatever else is going on in your life and just do business with God. To warm your heart's affections for Jesus. Why? Because in Jesus we find something amazing, which is that the majesty of God is revealed in the form of a man. God Almighty entered into our story and walked among us so that we could experience his grace and forgiveness. That all the majesty of God, Jesus had it, and yet he put that majesty on hold so that he could enter into your story and offer you a chance to have true relationship with God. And then he's called you now, because you've experienced how good he really is, to be light and hope to the people that you're living among. So it all starts here with this relationship with God. It all starts with an experience with God. So my prayer for us is we take a moment just to worship, that we would just be still and listen to God's voice, because he's still speaking, saying, who am I going to send? Who will go? Jesus, as we take this moment to just be still and hear your voice, God, I pray that you would come down in this place right now. That you would come and speak to our hearts, that you would reawaken within us a passion for who you are, because you're not just the God of the dead or the past, you're the God of the living and the present. So God, I pray that you would right here do work within our hearts, you would awaken within us a fresh desire for you. A fresh passion for you. Would you do that, Jesus? It's in your name, amen.
Thanks for listening to the Gospel Church podcast. Before you go, please hit subscribe. And if you want to give to support the mission, please hit the link in the description. We'll see you next week.